We've talked about the idea of controlling weather, but is there any evidence? See it for yourself in the September After Dark magazine. Also, are machines finally smarter than we are? Will they take over? And time travel, is it possible and who has tried it? The After Dark magazine, it's there for Coast to Coast AM listeners every month. Subscribe now, 1-888-727-5505. That's 1-888-727-5505 or online at coasttocoastam.com.
Now we take you back to the night of September 22nd, 1997, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
Now, back to Boris Said. Boris, welcome back.
Thank you. I'm here.
All right. Boris, first of all, you know what I would like you to do, if you can? Tell the American people why they should even be interested in the pyramids. In other words, what's the big deal?
Wow. Well, that's a tall order in itself. It's on our dollar bill. It was a Masonic symbol. Certainly had great significance to our founding fathers. There's all that stuff about the pyramids. I have my own theory, and which I'd really like to share with you, which I was hoping I'd be able to share in this Shore Expedition film, which now seems like it's not going to happen.
Well, we'll get to that, but the overall sort
of... My feeling, Art, is this in a large sense, that there were ancient civilizations that were as advanced or more highly advanced as our own. You can call them you can call it Atlantis, Mu, Lemuria, whatever. I believe there were ancient civilizations. And I don't believe that those people, those advanced scientists, hid their secrets from the world like a dog buries a bone. I don't think that you've got to dig in the ground for buried treasure because that's what the pirates used to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I happen to believe that the pyramid, for one, is an example, towering 450 feet above the plateau of advanced science. There are countless mathematical formulas expressed in the pyramids. Astronomers claim, and Robert Bovall wrote a brilliant book, The Orion Mysteries, about the alignment of the air shafts or star shafts with the planets of Orion, where the pharaohs allegedly made their home in the afterlife long before. Long ago, we found an even more amazing thing when we were there. We took Tom Danley, who's a sonics expert, he's a NASA consultant, to do some testing in the King's Chamber of the Great Pyramid, because anybody who's been there knows there are some very strange resonances, and if you lie in what they call a sarcophagus, which I don't believe is a sarcophagus, and you hum or you chant, there are certain notes which seem to connect you with the pyramid. It's like you just get into kind of an altered state if you lie in there and chant. So Danley went in and did some measurements, and we took sensors and we placed them in the five chambers above the King's Chamber, and then we put a huge set of amplifiers and woofers in the King's Chamber and began to test resonances.
Huh.
Now, Danley found that, and I think he's been on your program, Danley found that there were certain resonances or vibrations or musical tones, it all means the same thing, which were resonant in the King's Chamber and which were reinforced by the structure of the chamber. And these five notes, according to Danley, formed a chord, and musicologists like Jim Hertog and our composer Fritz Heed worked with these notes, and they found them to produce an F-sharp chord. Now, I'm not a musicologist. I'm a filmmaker. I'm a documentarian. But ancient text, according to Jim Hertog, relate that F-sharp was a harmonic of the earth. In other words, it was a vibration in harmony with the earth. And other teachers and spiritualists have suggested that F-sharp is a harmonic of the human being, of the body. All that is fine, and I felt was quite abstract.
It is. Boris, do you know the frequency, produce the actual frequency?
I have a set of those frequencies, and I could get. I don't have them at my fingertips.
No. I think it's very low, down around 7 or 8 hertz, something like that.
Well, I was getting to that. What happened was when Danley got back to his studio in Chicago, and examined his recordings, he found that there were some vibrations resonant in the chamber, which were below the range of human hearing.
Right.
And they occurred even when he wasn't making any sound.
To give the audience an idea, when we come and go from commercial breaks, we play a 25 hertz, what's called subaudible tone, which causes the radio station's equipment to run the commercials and so forth and so on. And then we play another one when we come back. These are subaudible tones at about 25 hertz. What we're talking here about, which the human ear really can't hear unless you amplify it greatly, we're talking about even much lower frequencies. The frequency thought to be the frequency of the very Earth itself, which was around 8 hertz. I don't know whether it still is or not.
Danley's notes were below 9 hertz. The lowest 5 notes he picked up were from half a hertz to 9 hertz.
Wow.
Now, the interesting thing about it is that when we raised those notes 3 or 4 octaves so that you could hear them, lo and behold, they produced the same F-sharp chord. Now, where did the sound come from? What Danley believes, and you got to remember that the pyramids used to have smooth sides. Danley believes that the ambient wind coming off the Sahara Desert, blowing across the ends of the air shafts, created a flute-like effect and created these vibrations. That little bit of air through those tiny 8-inch shafts, exciting 2.5 million blocks of granite. It seems absurd, but in Danley's own words, he says, it may seem unlikely, but the sounds are there. Here they are on the graph. Here they are on the computer.
All right, that's a monstrous version, Boris, isn't it, of kind of like taking a Coke bottle and going,
exactly,
and getting the resonance?
Exactly. And that was the example, precise example that I planned to use in my film, was we've got a guide with an Egyptian Coca-Cola bottle blowing across the end of it.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, that's it. The great thing about it, Art, is this. 4 months later, I was in Oregon in the Columbia River Valley with my friend Ward Stroud, who is a Yaqui Indian. He's a maker of ceremonial flutes. And lo and behold, his flutes are sacred to Mother Earth, and they're sacred instruments, and they're tuned to, you guessed it, F-sharp, as are many of the American sacred flutes. They're tuned to F-sharp because the shamans felt that this was a harmonic of Mother Earth, a sound sacred to Mother Earth.
So in other words, the Great Pyramid itself could be something, Boris, connected to Earth itself for some reason.
Yes, exactly. And
wow.
It's connected, Art. It's connected with mathematics. Karl Monk has done some amazing theories, and there are formulas that describe the circumference of the Earth and the location of the pyramids of Teotihuacan and all sorts of wonderful things. So there are all of these sciences expressed in this structure, which we persist in calling a tomb.
You don't think it's a tomb?
No, I don't think it's a tomb for a very simple reason. They've never found a body there. There are no decorations. It is unlike any other tomb in Egypt if it's a tomb.
Therefore, if it is not a tomb, what do you believe it to be?
I believe that it was a scientific instrument. I believe that its sonic significance was that it would produce an altered state. I think they're doing some work at Harvard and also at Stanford, which we're trying to get our hands on at the moment. But if you subject the human body to a bombardment of certain key low vibrations or low frequencies for a week or two, it may tend to produce an altered state, make the body more accessible to healing, may even create out-of-body states.
Do you want to really go out on a limb and perhaps speculate about ultimately what you think this altered state might be? And I guess I'll just tell you where I'm driving. In other words, could the pyramids possibly, Boris, be some sort of stargate?
Well, that's what I think they are. I mean, you said it, and so you said it first. I think it's very strange if you stop to think that if the pyramids were in fact built in 3500 BC, for the first 1,000 years of their existence, Not a single mummy in Egypt, not a single mummy of a pharaoh was ever found in Egypt.
By the way, do you believe they were built then?
I have nothing to base it on, Art. I believe the Sphinx is older, only because of the brilliant work that I think Robert Schock from Boston University did in identifying the marks on the outside. But the problem with the pyramids is you don't have an outside. It's been stripped away.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know when they were built, but I tend to think they're older. I mean, if you ask me for an opinion, I think they were older.
All right.
But assuming they were built in 3500 B.C., there was the first pharaoh's body that was ever found, I believe, was in 2550 B.C. So where were they all before that? What happened to them? And why did they have mummies in the first place? I mean, what was the purpose of preserving the body? And what was the purpose of creating this solar boat for the pharaoh's trip to the afterlife? Unless the Egyptians believed that somehow the pharaoh would go into that structure, and the priests would somehow send him into another state. That's what I believe it is.
Well, they were put in there after death, not just prior to, weren't they?
Well, it all depends on who you believe. I mean, yeah, that's what history tells us. But were they?
Boy, that's a very good question. One might imagine that that trip would be made while what we know as the soul would still be within the body, which might suggest they might try to get them in there just prior to death.
Yes, or possibly they might just put them in there when they were ready to go and create an out-of-body trance and send them on their way. There have been suggestions, according to Jim Hertog, there's some suggestions that the pharaohs were tested on their knowledge of the universe before they were allowed access into the afterlife. And so perhaps when the pharaoh thought he was ready, he just went and got in the box and the priests made their sounds and away he went.
Let me ask you a little bit about the, you said in the beginning, if you go into the Great Pyramid and you lie in the sarcophagus and you spend time, that you will begin to enter in some sort of altered state. Have you tried this yourself?
Yes, I have.
And?
Well, I've had a lot of very strange experiences there. I had one which was witnessed, which was documented, and that was that we were in there for the night, and I was there with another person, and I had some Tibetan chants that Dr. Hertog had given me, and I was playing them on quadraphonic speakers in the room.
Yes.
And I had a sensation that I was going out through the top of the pyramid, and I can remember, and this was 1992, and we were in the middle of our Mystery of the Sphinx show, and I had the distinct impression that I was walking in the rain, and I thought, well, now this is strange, you know, that I must be dreaming about my own show, because, of course, we'd stated that rain had damaged the pyramid and the Sphinx. And I wound up, of all things, playing backgammon in a cafe at the foot of the Sphinx. There's a cafe where a lot of friends of mine play backgammon late at night.
Uh-huh.
And I wound up playing backgammon with them. Now, you know, as some people go back and become Tutankhamun and other people go get to dance with Nefertiti, right? I went and played a little backgammon with my buddies. And when they woke me up, I was very disappointed to come to in the pyramid. I thought to myself, well, I slept through my first night in the pyramid. We know what a bore. And as we were walking down the stairs, my companion said, you know, what did you experience? And I said, well, I went for a walk in the rain. And she said, that's ridiculous. It's July. Mm-hmm. Well, when we got outside the pyramid, that was the first shocker, because it had rained all morning, all night. And on into the morning, there were puddles everywhere.
Really?
Absolutely. And you can believe this or not, and I'm not sure that I believe it or not, but when I went down to the backgammon game that night, I remembered something about having an incredible run of doubles from my dream, and I thought it was a dream. When I got down there, there was a wooden table, which is still there today. You can see it next week when you go, in which my friends had carved the run of doubles, two double sixes, a double four, and two double ones. And they had carved it into the table and said they'd never play the game with me again. Now,
boy, oh boy.
That's a pretty wild story.
Yes, it is.
And I've probably discredited myself now for the rest of the evening.
No, not at all, because I think everybody believes there is something to this. And I think that there is some sort of key with low frequencies, and it would make sense to me that if that is not some simple burial place for people, that it is indeed attached to the earth for a very specific, as you said, scientific purpose. And we need to discover that.
That's right.
That would suggest that in some ways there was a civilization in some way far advanced from where we are right now in a different sort of way. Would that be fair?
I absolutely believe it. I can't imagine that not being the case.
If there was this great civilization prior to ours, something the Christians will get very angry if we consider seriously here, and they built this instrument, this scientific instrument, literally into, in combination with the earth, then what may lie ahead? In other words, what may we yet discover? What secrets do you think the pyramid may yet hold, and the Sphinx?
Well, certainly they must have a lot to do with energy. Because if you look at the size of those stones, we, in the Mystery of the Sphinx, interviewed a crane operator
yes.
who couldn't imagine how, even with modern cranes, you could place 200-ton stones from a sand base. They must have had something to do with energy. If you go to Baalbek in Lebanon, the stones weigh 1,500 tons, and they're piled 3 and 4 courses high. So obviously they must have known something about it. It must have been easier for them to lift stones than cut them. Otherwise, why would the stones be so big?
Well, that is another topic by itself. In fact, the Japanese, I believe, tried to duplicate, didn't they, Boris?
Yes, and failed.
And failed.
Absolutely. There must be a knowledge there having to do with energy, having to do with an awareness of where we are. Somebody told me an amazing thing today. I mean, we're one day after the autumnal equinox, if I've said that correctly.
Mm-hmm.
It was yesterday. It is apparently a fact, though I don't know it, that from outer space, if you look down at the Earth on the day of the spring and the autumn equinoxes, on those 2 days,
yes.
as the sun is leaving the pyramid of the sun at Teotihuacan, it is beginning to shine on the pyramid of Giza, and only on that one day. Now, I don't know if that's true or not, but it's been confirmed to me by a couple of people. It seems sort of unlikely, but why not?
All right, there is some thought that within or beneath the Sphinx, the paw of the Sphinx, may lie chambers in which something called the Hall of Records may reside. Now, that would be, or I guess is said to be, a sort of library documenting all the technology of this previous civilization. Is that correct?
That's the story, yes.
You believe that?
Let's put it this way, Art. I know there's a chamber there because I've seen it on 2 different scientific instruments. In 1991, Dr. DeBecky documented a 30 by 40 foot rectangular anomaly about 35 feet below the surface under the paws of the Sphinx, and he did that with seismic technology. We went back there in the spring of 1996, and Dr. DeBecky, with ground-penetrating radar, confirmed that there was, in fact, a rectangular anomaly under the paws.
This was part of the Shore Expedition or
this
not?
This was the first time was the West, the John West Expedition.
John Anthony West?
Yes, and the second time was with part of the Shore Expedition.
So, in other words, through ultrasound, and then now through X-ray as well, there's confirmation in both technologies that there is a chamber indeed under the Sphinx.
Right. Now, what's in it? That's another story. I'm perfectly willing to accept that there's a library down there, but I think that I still believe that the obvious clue to the existence of an advanced technology is 500 feet above the Earth in plain sight. I mean, you can walk in there for $6 and have a look at it and measure and test and to your heart's content. There's nothing secret about it. We just don't understand how to figure it out yet. Like Rubik's Cube or something, you know. I mean, if you don't know how to do it, you can't do it.
All right, Boris, that's a good place to hold it. We'll be back after the top of the hour. Take a rest. It's going to be a very interesting night. There's no question about it. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from September 22nd, 1997.
I see them blue for me and you, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue